What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hope you guys had a wonderful weekend. Welcome back to Redacted on this Monday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris. Welcome to our new set. It's a temporary, but we're in transit. Thank you so much for being here with us, though.
Yeah, it is temporary, so please forgive cuts and bruises and stuff. So again, we're working on that over the next few weeks. The new one will be built out and everything. So thank you guys for joining us here on this Monday. Hey, I should point out that we have a loaded show for you today. A lot of interesting stories that we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about Trump declaring martial law. This is what Democrats are saying, of course, is going to happen on April 20th. They've been warning about this, that President Trump is going to seize power. He's going to use the U.S. military. Okay, well, that, maybe that's what exactly.
Do you see the symbolism of that?
420, taking control of the U.S. southern border and putting military members, members of the military all across the United States to make sure that that he's grabbing power. So we're going to talk about that. Plus Iran, Pete Hegseth, the defense secretary of the weekend, saying that better get to the negotiating table or they will specifically be used massive military attacks against Iran. We're going to talk about that in today's show.
Plus, the European Union admits that it is taking this climate money that they told you would save the planet. Oh, no, they're funneling it to left-wing lobbyist groups. They're not supposed to do that. They say, we're sorry, we won't do it again. But why was that okay in the first place, do you think? Why was that happening? Could it be because all European leaders are socialist monsters?
It could be.
That's the answer. But
okay,
you know what I mean.
You already gave them the answer.
Yeah, but we're going to talk more about it.
Also, a bombshell CIA report out that finally shows these documents about a UFO crash that happened over 30 years ago. Really fascinating story. And why are we just learning about this now? But more importantly, what actually happened during this event? We're excited. I'm excited to have James Fox on the show today. Obviously, documentary filmmaker, UFO investigator, to dive deep into that story and so much more. So very excited to have James on the show today. But we've got so much news to get to. Thank you guys for subscribing and being here with us. It's free to subscribe to the show. So whether you're watching us on Rumble, on X, on YouTube, on Twitch, we're streaming live on all those platforms right now. So we're
also, Clayton has kicked me under the table telling me that I'm not looking you in the eye. I thought the camera was there. It's there. I apologize.
There's a giant monitor there. So she's like, I'm just going to stare at myself.
Is my hair okay today? Does there seem to be a hole in it?
Wow, sorry. That's okay. While we were setting up the temporary studio last night, our 8-year-old was in here and she was doing exactly what you were doing. She was just like bouncing in front of the camera.
I apologize. I'm here now. I'm with you. We're going to do this. This is serious news. All right. Before we do that, though, we want to remind you that Redacted is brought to you by Fast Growing Trees. So if you have spring fever, you're ready to plant something in your yard, this is a great place to start because fastgrowingtrees.com has amazing selection of any kind of tree that you would like that they can ship to your house. So you don't have to go to a box retailer, put that in your car, get dirt all over the place. No, they can ship it to you in a beautiful shipping container with no mess, no fuss, and it's ready to plant. Plus there's a great selection there and they can advise you on what would go great in your yard, in your climate, in which location, whether it needs sun or not. So really, you cannot fail with fast-growing trees. So check them out. Hand on over to fastgrowingtrees.com. Use the code redacted, and you'll get an additional 15% off at checkout. So once again, the code is redacted. Head on over to fastgrowingtrees.com. You may have noticed that this is the planting season. Costco wants you to buy trees. Home Depot wants you to buy trees, so go first to fastgrowingtrees.com. Use the code redacted. Get an additional 15% off at checkout.
All right. Well, if you listen to people with Trump derangement syndrome, President Trump is about to declare martial law on April 20th and use wartime powers to round up political enemies, of course. So you only have 6 days left to prepare for Trump's martial law. This is exactly what Democrat James Carville is saying this morning. Here it is. Democrats in full panic mode over absurd conspiracy that Trump will declare martial law on April 20th. We want to bring in Daniel McAdams now from the Ron Paul Institute. He is the executive director of the Ron Paul Institute to talk about this, because I also want to talk about with Daniel this and Iran, two big stories that we want to kind of get to today. Daniel, good to see you again. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much. It's great to be back with you guys.
So let's just go through this because, and you can help us make sense of this. So I'm just going to go through this Gateway Pundit article here. So the left is melting down, it reads, once again, and this time over a tinfoil hat level conspiracy theory that President Donald Trump is preparing to declare martial law on April 20th. It's a blue and on fantasy of their own. The source of this hysteria, James Carville. He was just on the War Room where he talked about what would happen under President Trump using martial law. He says, you're so correct to be concerned about this. It's getting worse by the day. It's not going to stop getting worse. And we ought to be on high alert. And basically, Daniel, it seems like the left's panic, according to the Gateway Pundit, stems from a total misreading of his January 20th executive order, putting U.S. military on the U.S. southern border. And by putting tens of thousands of forces, which he's already been doing, on the southern border, this is the source of the problem. Is that how you read it?
Yeah, when I first got the link from your team, I thought, oh my gosh, I hope they don't believe this. This is the craziest thing I've heard. I mean, there are a lot of things to be critical of Trump about, but if I were Trump, I'd be happy if these were my adversaries and my enemies because they're so dumb. They bring things up like this. Carville is not doing himself or his allies any favors. Now, there are some concerns about what Trump is doing with some deportations, and that is a fact. But rather than address those specifically and on principle, they throw out this hyperbolic stuff that will basically just discredit their arguments. So will Trump do that? You know, I'm not a betting man, but I would bet that he's not going to do that. He's not going to shut down the country because we've got a border problem. So Carville, I don't know what he's smoking these days, but it's too strong.
Maybe he's just trying to keep his relevancy. It seems like that. Specifically, the U.S. military will occupy public land on the southern border to create along this sort of buffer zone that Theodore Roosevelt had put in place back in 1907. But of course, Democrats are painting this as like a land grab by the United States military. But you can see here this actual buffer zone here as it goes across the United States. And it has basically, it allows the American, it's like 60 foot deep, basically, is this public land that Teddy Roosevelt put in place. So it's not a land grab. It's been there over 100 years.
You have to ask yourself, why are they so opposed to stopping people from coming to this country illegally? You know, I mean, is it voters right. They're looking for? Maybe get a better platform, guys, you know? Think of some better stuff to say and maybe you'll attract some voters. You know, what do they have against this? Now, there can be some problems if you over-militarize, if you use the military in ways that they really shouldn't be used because they're trained to blow stuff up and kill people. And that's what we want them to do. So, you can question some of that, but just to question the fact that by all objective standards, illegal border crossings have crashed since Trump has come to office. And most Americans believe that's a very good thing, you know?
Right.
Right. Well, let's talk about what Democrats think, though, because a new Rutgers poll out this weekend shows that 55% of Democrats think it's okay or maybe even preferable to assassinate the president. They're fully on board with this. And over the weekend, Alex Jones was on Tucker Carlson. And if you listen to this, he says, yeah, this is James Carville's leading and Democrats like it. Listen.
And then when they knew Trump was going to win because the poll numbers were so incredible, a few months before the last election last year, Raskin, Carville, Podesta, all of them said civil war conditions. We're going to need to have uprisings. Carville said that. Trump's coming to kill you. We got to rise up, Carville said, and others. And they are clearly escalating with the Tesla attacks and the swatting attacks and the calls for violence. The 55% of liberal Democrats in a study want Trump killed. They are embracing real terrorism, real domestic terrorism, and that's building towards what I believe is in the cards, because you see the Democrat pundits and their operatives everywhere before the election and after it in the last 78 days or so, saying once he got in office, Trump and Tom Homan are going to kill migrants. And when they do, there's going to be an uprising. And, well, Trump's not going to go mow down people at an illegal alien demonstration. You also have them saying Trump supporters are going to attack black people. Well, where would black people be alone in big numbers? A church, university? Trump supporters are going to kill black people. And we know a lot of the globalist groups have been funding white supremacist groups and domestic terror groups and basically run them historically.
Okay. So one of the things that he goes on to say is what Democrats don't know is that if they were to succeed, the eventuality of what happens if President Trump were in fact assassinated would be far worse. But he doesn't extrapolate. So what do you think would happen in terms of far worse, total chaos? What is your read of that?
Well, I have to say it's very sad. You know, I moved to barely post-communist Eastern Europe right as the wall fell. And what I saw there is families that were so involved in politics. It meant so much to them that they literally would hate other family members. And I remember at the time thinking how insane this is. We weren't like that in America. We had differences, but we didn't flip out and alienate family members. Politics in America has become so important to Americans that they will literally talk about assassinating someone. Folks, get real. It's never going to matter to you as much who is the president. It's not going to matter in your everyday lives. It's very, very sad to see this. And that's why conservatives like us and libertarians, the argument is to reduce the role of government in our lives so you don't have this insane derangement syndrome.
Yeah, and it is out of hand. I mean, the derangement is crazy right now. And, you know, as a lot of people in our chat room are saying right now, you know, Alex Jones nailed this. I mean, he nailed this repeatedly, and he's nailing it again right now. So this interview with Tucker predates this James Carville commentary, which is crazy to me. He was talking about James Carville making these, you know, that we're going to see Tom Holman, the U.S. military is going to kill immigrants. And then here we have it, like 2 days later. It's kind of insane. I know people can say whatever they want about Alex Jones, but he nails it, I mean, repeatedly. And just to be clear about this Department of Defense jurisdiction over these lands, Daniel, the soldiers have the right to detain illegal aliens as they would if they were trespassing on a United States military base. In other words, this 60-foot plot of land treats that 60-foot plot of land as if it's a military base. So the military then has the right to detain these illegal aliens until they're handed over to immigration authorities, as if they were just invading Fort Bragg. Is that the way you read it as well?
I think it's a great deterrent as well. I mean, under Biden, if they got over there, they'd hand them a WIC card or, you know, a debit card here, a couple $1,000 on it, you know?
Right.
What are they going to do? They're going to pass the word back to their relatives where they came from. Hey, you're not going to believe this. When you get there, they give you a card and you get free stuff, you know? So having the military on the border as a deterrent, what are they going to say when they call back? Man, it was terrible. I couldn't get through. There were guys with big guns. Forget it, guys. Cancel the crossing. So that's what you want. You want a deterrent.
Well, not only that, is that they are unsafe on the way there as they go through these drug lands. They are they're victims of predators, which are the cartel on the south end of the border. And so those people, those dead ladies who have been raped and kidnapped and their babies taken, those dead ladies tell no tales, like Davy Jones' locker, right? And so how can we get that word? It's not just, I mean, the U.S. soldiers are the least of your worries on your way north, right?
Yeah. The predators, the coyotes, the child traffickers, the perverts and weirdos. I mean, they just thrive in that kind of an environment. So absolutely, you think about kids crossing the border in areas like that. So, I mean, the soldiers are there, I think, as a great deterrent to people. It's no longer open season. You can't come in, you know. And I'm in favor of lots of immigration if it's legal. And I think a lot of recently arrived people are in favor, but they're among the most opposed to illegal immigration because they waited in line and they did it the right way.
Right. Yeah, I was talking to a group of Mexican Americans who were here. They waited in line to get their citizenship. And this Mexican American said, the greatest threat to me and my living and my way of life is Mexicans who come here illegally. I just about fell out of my chair when he said it, but he was admitting it openly. And he's right, because they'll take his job. And so I find that absolutely fascinating. I want to talk about Iran here before we get you out of here, Daniel. Over the weekend, Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth was on with Maria Bartiromo and was asked about Iran, whether these negotiations are moving forward, direct negotiations with Iran, not just using Israel as like an end-around proxy to get there. And here's what he had to say about attacking Iran if Iran doesn't want to come to the table. Watch.
We've had direct talks yesterday. They began in the past. It's been indirect talks with a mediator, but there's Steve Witkoff meeting with the foreign minister of Iran. What can he tell us?
Well, I can tell you that President Trump is dead serious on this issue. He's dead serious that Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. He's said that for 20 years. He's been consistent. That is clear. He's dead serious that he wants it done at the negotiating table. He wants it done peacefully. Yeah. And that's why he's going straight to these talks. He set that deadline. These were productive talks yesterday. I don't want to get ahead of our skis. Steve Witkoff does a fantastic job, but it was a good step, and they're going to go at it again on Saturday. But he's also dead serious that if we can't figure this out at the negotiating table, then there are other options to include my department to ensure that Iran never has a nuclear bomb. We hope we never get there. We really do, Maria. But what we're doing with the Houthis and what we're doing in the region, we've shown a capability to go far, to go deep, and to go big. And again, we don't want to do that. But if we have to, we will, to prevent the nuclear bomb in Iran's hands.
You know, Daniel, when I read that, when I hear that, I want to be a positive person and think that, yes, we want negotiation. But it seems like there's people surrounding the president who absolutely want us to go to war with Iran. And I know that firsthand, actually. There's people near Trump that absolutely want to follow the Netanyahu plan to go to war. It sounds like, just hearing Hegseth talk there, it doesn't really sound like they want these negotiations to work out. Am I wrong about that?
Well, the thing that really struck me is you're offering up our war against the Houthis as a show of success. You know, dude, you spent $1 billion in 3 weeks, and all you did is blow up a tribal gathering and blow up the drinking water facilities for 50,000 people. You are not having success in Yemen. That's not your success. But when I got the clip from your team, that was the first, I hadn't seen it before. That's the first thought I had. There is a group that are very close to Trump that want him to fail in these talks. They want war. Now, he said, we'll do anything we can to prevent them from getting a bomb. Well, let me tell you something, Pete. Tulsi Gabbard just went before Congress a couple of weeks ago and said, once again, the entirety of the United States intelligence community asserts that Iran is not working toward a nuclear weapon. They do not have a nuclear weapon. It's been the same since 2003 when they stopped working on a nuclear weapon. So good news, Pete Hegseth, stop rattling your saber. Let some diplomacy take precedent here. They're not building a bomb. Tulsi said they're not building a bomb. So what's the big deal? They are creating something. They're trying to put Trump in a box to where that's his only option. And that's really dangerous.
Well, during the Biden administration, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said, well, we need to see Iran working with the IAEA, which they have. And the IAEA has said several times, we've inspected every gram of uranium. And so Americans need to start asking the question, is this weapons of mass destruction? Because that was a lie. You have not proven that Iran has a nuclear weapon. Let's leave aside the question that Israel has a nuclear weapon. Britain has a nuclear weapon. So why do we decide which friends we want to have them and which we don't? That's also a pertinent question. But shall we collectively rise up and say, this is weapons of destruction narrative. It's nonsense. Knock it off.
And Tom Cotton said as much, the senator from Arkansas said as much a few days ago. He said, everyone's going to say this is going to be so hard. It's going to be, essentially, he said, it's going to be a cakewalk. He said, where did we hear that before? That was 2002, when all the neocons lined up to tell us it's going to be a cakewalk. Even Netanyahu said, guys, if you take out Saddam, it's going to be peace in the Middle East. Well, we've had nothing but the opposite since we listened to Netanyahu. And these people, who are they working for, Netanyahu or the American people? That's what I would like to know.
Glenn Deason tweeted this, Daniel, threatening the use of force is illegal under international law, but near obligatory under the rules-based international order. It seems like that's the case, right? We've just sort of thrown out, you know, international law at this point.
Well, I mean, given Iran has the most disincentive to not get a weapon. In other words, for the U.S. attacking all of Israel's enemies in the region, the only thing seemingly that can protect Iran is if they do get one. So if we actually didn't want them to get one, we should stop getting involved in the Middle East attacking all of the enemies of Israel. Let Israel handle its own affairs in the Middle East, you know? Stop paying for them. Stop giving them weapons. They're big boys. Let them grow up and act like grown-ups.
Right.
Grover Lord in our... In our Rumble chats, there's no stopping the war machine. Your only hope is to care for your neighbor as yourself and pray they do the same. Are we down to praying now that we just hope that these war hawks surrounding Trump, who are having it bending his ear, keep, you know, clearer heads prevail here and we'd actually don't go to war?
Well, I'm a big proponent of praying. Prayer can move mountains, and certainly our Lord hopefully will guide the hands, because guess what? He's the Prince of Peace. So if you want peace, they can wrap themselves in religion and go for war, but that's not how it worked out back then, guys.
Well, let me tell you this. During the Trump inauguration, his speech said, "We will be known for the wars we win and the wars we do not get into." And I held to that like a baby blanket, and I'm going to keep doing that. So let's join together and remind the president that he promised us not to get into new wars.
Yeah.
So thank you so much,
Amen.
Dan, for your contribution.
Thanks, Dan. Great to see you.
Take care, guys. Great to see you guys again. Take care.
All right, more news to come here on this Monday. We're going to talk about the aviation disasters that we've been experiencing in the United States. What is going on here? The most recent one, tragically, in the Hudson River. Of course, a helicopter propeller flying off, both propellers flying off, the tail propeller and the main propeller flying off. But why is the media so late to tell us who's piloting these things? Why are they trying to protect the pilots and all of this? We're going to talk about aviation disasters. Plus, we're going to talk about the EU admitting to this green scam, right?
That's right. The EU was taking this idea that we need to fight climate change, raising money on it, and funneling it to left-wing lobbyist groups. I know you're not surprised, but it's still outrageous. You're not surprised because you've been shown this template in the United States. Now we're seeing, yes, it exists in most socialist governments. And that's where I think socialism breeds, would we say it's a fertile ground, the EU? Yes.
The EU
is fertile ground for socialism. And that's, so we're going to talk to Ralph Schollhammer about that.
But before we do that, I want to tell you about our friends over at Lear Capital, because I don't know if you say, take a look at these gold prices right now. Well, over the past few days, it's up about 8% right now. It's skyrocketed. Silver prices up now, nearing up to about $32 an ounce right now. This is why, and why is gold right now and silver outperforming Bitcoin? Thank you. Hand me some gold. Hand me some of this. I want to show you some of the silver here. So when you work with our friends at Lear Capital, you can actually get, your silver coins and your silver dollars. Excuse me. There you go. There's some silver coins just sent right to your house, shipped right to your house. And you can store it in your gun safe. Oh, I got the silver ounce. Here it is, a full ounce of silver right here as well. And you can have gold bars sent to you as well and gold coins shipped right to you. You can store it in your gun safe if you want to, or you can have it guarded in a facility offsite. You can order it and have it stored there as well. That's what we do. I just have a few here just to show you in the house. But anyway, our friends at Lear Capital can help you get set up and investing in gold and silver, precious metals, right now. And again, we started investing in gold when it was about $1,700 an ounce, $1,800 an ounce, and now it's $3,200 an ounce. And we've been, of course, telling you for years on this show that when governments are in turmoil, fiat currencies collapse. The government currencies collapse. All of them in world history have collapsed. All of them. So what makes you think that now suddenly the US dollar is going to be the one that survives this chaos? I'm sorry, it's not going to happen. But gold has sustained for 5,000 years, and same with silver. So again, if you want to invest, I would give them a call right now. They're an American company. Here's their 800 number on your screen, 1-800-613-3557. And just talk to them on the phone. Tell them you heard about them from Redacted. They're a great American company. They will walk you through the process of this. Makes it very, very simple to invest and get up and running right now. If you just go to LearRedacted.com is another place you can go, LearRedacted.com. And check it out. Get their free gold and silver guide, and they'll ship it right to your house. Very, very easy to do. So LearRedacted.com. We appreciate them for supporting the show. Thank you guys for joining us today on this Monday.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Well, the European Commission admitted recently that it has been using EU funds that were supposed to fight climate change for financing left-wing NGOs and climate organizations with the aim of silencing the voices of conservatives in this secret influence operation. The EU Life program was supposed to be, you know, doing what they say, fighting climate change, but instead they were financing left-wing NGOs, non-governmental organizations, and climate organizations. And now they've said, oops, sorry, we're not going to do that again. Do we believe them? Well, Ralf Schollhammer joins us from Austria. He is the host of the Hammer Time Show on YouTube and an expert on European politics. Ralf, I know you're so surprised, right? So surprised.
And a personal friend of the show, I was recently told. I think that's very important to mention.
We did, in fact. We called you a friend, capital F.
Yes. Yes. Friend of the show. Friend of the show.
No, that makes me, that filled me with a lot of joy and a lot of pride. So I'm very grateful that I always have the occasion to speak to you and your audience. I'm truly grateful. Yeah, it is not a surprise, but it's even more insidious than this, because let's just look at the amount over the last 7 years. We are talking about 7 billion euros. I think that's around $9 billion, if I got the exchange rate approximately right. So these are vast sums. And by the way, just as a comparison, I think it was about a small amount in the millions that is the reason that Marine Le Pen has, for now at least, been banned from running for the presidency in France, where she, according to polls, would be the front runner and most likely to win. So you see again, these there is democracy and then there is democracy in Europe. But what is even more insidious is, so you had this kind of game that was being played. So the European Union gave money to these NGOs. These NGOs were then writing reports that the climate catastrophe is nigh and the world is going to end tomorrow. And then these reports that were funded by the EU were used by the EU to justify their climate policies and all the things that pretty much established a contact between EU and I, right? Anti-nuclear, net zero, all the green madness that we've been talking about for years. So this has been a circle industry that was very lucrative for all of those involved. And of course, everybody who was involved was in one way or another in touch or related to, or you know, in a personal or professional capacity, very close to Europe's left-wing party. So it's not a surprise. I'm very relieved in the sense that this is slowly but surely coming to the surface. But I hasten to add, it is not so different from what the Trump administration has uncovered regarding US aid. I mean, just to give you an example, one person that I'm sure that many of you American listeners are familiar with that got millions out of the US Agency for International Development was Bill Kristol. And I think Bill Kristol lives like what, within the closer urban or suburban area of Washington, D.C.? I mean, how much of U.S. aid money for international development actually left the Beltway? So these have all been slush funds for close to government or close to EU institutions. And what they built is not so much a deep state. I would say it's actually a shadow state that constantly exists next to whoever is in government. And this brings me to a point that I've been making on your show many times. There has been, in the past at least, a difference between in office and being in power. And the right sometimes was in office, but the left always was in power. And I'm very happy to see that under Donald Trump, this appears to change. Donald Trump is not going to be perfect, right? Every man is flawed. Every individual is flawed. But I think in these areas, he's moving very much in the right direction. And apparently it's contagious in a good way, also in Europe, that now we find these things out and that they have been brought to daylight.
But can we just reiterate how this has made Europeans' life worse? So while they're doing this and pumping you with these BS studies that they funded in order to continue to raise money, it's such a grift. Europeans have gone without. We've covered the Dutch farmers, many of them put out of business, the livestock farmers. We've talked about how many building projects don't get off the ground because of, oh, we have to make a new rule because we have a new project. It goes way beyond just you need a slow flow shower now, but actually Europeans have been asked to live with less because of this.
Well, and can I just say, Ralph, also it's intentional. It's intentional, right? This is an intentional destruction of Europe. We had Christine Anderson on the show, member of parliament from Germany, just the other day. And she said, yeah, this is an intentional strategy to bring down. And it's all part of this sort of globalist agenda, is it not?
Well, give us some more examples of like the way that you see that you get butt up against walls trying to live in Europe against these brick walls that have the facade of green climate intention.
Well, if you go back to what you just mentioned, for example, one of the movements that started it all, the Dutch farmers, which I think are always a very good example of this. The problem we have is not so much that there's a globalist elite. I would argue, and I'm happy to have a conversation, a discussion about this, that to some extent, elites are always somewhat universal and somewhat globalist, right? The jet setters and all. I think this has always been the case. That is not so much the new phenomenon of the contemporary elites. I think what makes them different is that so many of the causes that they, you know, that they nail to their mast are directly opposed to the interests of a majority of the people. We have what Rob Henderson is calling luxury beliefs, which are the beliefs that the elites hold, but they are, as the term says, they are luxury and they are rich enough and they can shield themselves from the consequences of their own ideological leanings. But of course, the majority of the people is paying quite literally, but also metaphorically, a very high price for it. I mean, take the issue of migration, for example. I mean, the Europeans, and I would say also the Americans, have been opposed to mass migration since the 1980s. It's not a new phenomenon. And the elites more or less stuck the thing into their ear, said, nah, we cannot hear you. And everybody who's against mass migration is a Nazi or a fascist or an extreme right winger. And it made them feel good about themselves. And I think this is one of the main things that drives the globalist movement. It is not so much the financial interests, because all of them are very rich already. It is more this kind of messiah complex, if you want, right? This idea, how can you feel good about yourself? And that is if you promote policies that are horrible for the working class and for the middle class, but if you're rich enough to afford it, then you can do it. And I think this is the big issue we have with this, what I call the status quo elites, because we see now that there is, people want change. So they vote for parties that could cause change. Trump in the United States, Le Pen in France, the AfD in Germany, the Freedom Party in Austria. But what they do now is, on the one hand, they weaponize the judicial system. And the other thing they do quite openly is, as we saw in Romania, they simply annul or cancel elections if the result is not what they're hoping for. And they do it ever more blatantly. But let me say one more thing, because I don't want to monologue for too long. But there is this most recent cover page of The Economist that in seriousness says it's a picture of the Statue of Liberty that has moved to Europe because Europe is now the land of the free and the land of freedom. Europe is now a continent.
That's like a cartoon.
It is. I mean, this, you can no longer take this. I was always giving them the benefit of the doubt because I'm generally positively inclined towards humanity, which is getting more and more difficult. But they really believe that stuff. I mean, to give you one quick example, recently police accosted a man in the United Kingdom who was saying that people in England should speak English. Oh my God, the horror, right? You had somebody in Germany making a meme, a pretty funny one, a meme about the Minister of the Interior holding up a sign saying, I hate freedom of speech. He was now sentenced to 7 months in prison. And I can go on and on and on. There are examples after example after example. And then you have a magazine like The Economist saying, Europe, land of the free. Yes, if you go with the program. But you could also say, well, if you were a Bolshevik, then the Soviet Union was the land of the free, right? And you, if you happen to be an Aryan and not a Jew in Nazi Germany, you could say it was the land of the free. It's we're moving more and more, I think, into the farcical and satirical part of this. But it's frustrating because a new world would mean that those who are in power now would have to give up that power. And as we can see, they do everything they can to prevent or they do everything they can to avoid giving up power.
Yeah. I mean, The Economist is perfect to lining your birdcage with. It's like, you know, liberal drivel. I mean, you had Keir Starmer in the White House just a few weeks ago, face to face with J.D. Vance, when J.D. Vance, vice president, called him out about clamping down on freedoms in England. And he lied right to his face saying that that's not happening. But that's what these leaders are doing. And that's exactly, they know it's happening and they're championing it.
But Article 11 of the EU Charter still does allow for freedom of expression. So why can someone arrested in Germany not appeal to an EU court? Is What happens there? Or are they just going to, they need to take an eraser to that,
I suppose. No, they tried. For example, the candidate in Romania was appealing to the European Court because he argued justifiably so. What happened to him was illegal, was unjustified. And the European Court just said, no, this is not our jurisdiction. They just pretty much cleaned the hands of it. You're absolutely right. And the problem we have in Europe, as you have it in the United States, is that there is an activist or an ideological judiciary. I mean, it's completely absurd to claim that when we all know that particularly in the universities, students are marinated and indoctrinated into a certain worldview, that this would not also apply to people who study law and then become, you know, lawyers, judges, and what have you. And this is precisely what you see in Europe. And the worst thing is that they're ideologically indoctrinated to say that whenever you do this, whenever you prevent democracy from actually, you know, doing what democracy does, meaning getting new people into power, giving new people in charge, they say you can't allow this to happen because then you risk democracy. So we have to save democracy. And what Keir Starmer does, Keir Starmer is, and I say this without trying to be hyperbolic, I think he is, in a way, maybe not a totalitarian, but he's definitely an authoritarian. What is happening in the United Kingdom, it's not as bad in the UK. It's not as bad in France. It's not as bad in Germany. What is happening in the UK is basically that this is no longer a country that has freedom of speech. If you can get arrested, if you can get accosted, if you can get intimidated by the police for voicing your opinion, you do not have freedom of speech. If you have legal constructs like non-criminal hate incidents where the police can accost you even though you did not commit a crime, you are no longer a free country. You are trying to intimidate the people because that's the goal. It's as Mao said, punish one, educate a thousand. And this is what they try to do in the UK and other parts of Europe.
Ralph Schollhammer, always a voice of reason in Europe. Thank you for holding truth to power over there. We really appreciate it. Ralph, great to see you as always. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Always. Yeah. Thanks, Ralph. All right. We've got more news to get to here on your Monday. We're going to talk about this UFO incident, CIA documents showing a really startling and as they described it, almost like a fierce incident with actually alien creatures. And I'm going to save it for you because it's unbelievable. James Fox is going to be joining us. Of course, UFO investigator, documentary filmmaker. I hope you've seen his phenomenal documentaries over the years, like The Phenomenon and his new one, The Program. So James Fox is going to be joining us in a moment. We're also going to talk about those aviation disasters, why multiple aviation disasters in back-to-back sequence. We're going to talk about that in a second. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends over at Aura, because if you are interested in protecting your data like we all should be, then Aura is a great place to start. Because on average, it takes a company about 277 days to report a breach. Well, in that time, your data has been long gone, exposed for months. And then you're just hearing about this right now, and this isn't even the first one. The Bank of America has announced several breaches this year. Last year, it was Citigroup, JP Morgan Chase. There's always something. So if you want someone tracking your data so that you can get real-time notifications if there is any compromise, you want to try Aura. They can start you on a 14-day free trial. And in that 14 days, you may get some notices that you didn't know about, and you think, okay, I need to have this tracked all the time. Let Aura do the hard work of keeping you safe online. What they do is they scan the web and they alert you if your phone number, your email, your address, your social security has been listed on the dark web, and you can start to do something about it. You can change passwords. You can track this stuff down. You can notify your credit agencies. There's a lot of tasks you'll need to do far more than 277 days after the fact. So check them out. Go to Aura.com. That's Aura.com/redacted. They also do credit monitoring and things like that. So check out their buffet of offerings. One more time, that's Aura.com/redacted.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
What is dadication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariana. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dadication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Well, six people died in a helicopter crash last week and last week in the Hudson River near the Jersey Shore. Now the tour company is shutting down for good. But what is this all about? This private charter plunged into the Hudson River in New York City. Agustin Escobar, president and CEO of Siemens, was in Spain, and the pilot lost their lives in this crash along with his three kids and his wife. Really tragic. On the same day, two American Airlines regional jets clipped their wings on the ground at Ronald Reagan National Airport. Former pilot, Boeing whistleblower, Jim Desmond joins us now to talk about all of this and more. Jim, great to see you. As a former pilot, I want to get your sense of, are we seeing like an enhanced or an abundance of these crashes recently, or because of social media, do you think we're learning more about these crashes?
Well, it seems to be both ways. Be honest with you, the news is instantaneous anymore, and so normally when you hear wingtips clipping each other on an airport, normally isn't big news. But when it comes behind the crash at Reagan, where you had the American Airlines and the helicopter, and then this helicopter coming apart out of New York, and so. The clipping wings is normally something it actually happens more often than you think, just because it's the gateway gates and taxiways are really kind of tight. And Reagan Airport's a tight airport in and of itself, just a small footprint there with all the traffic that they get. So I think it is a little bit sensationalized, but people deserve to know what's happening.
Now, is it normal that we don't have very many answers about, say, the plane that flipped in Toronto or the civilian aircraft that was hit by the Black Hawk? It seems like the media cycle of that would continue, but the media is very like, this happens, moving on. Is it because the Trump administration sucks so much air out of the news cycle, or are we waiting for answers that we may not get because there's a lack of curiosity?
Well, the NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board, that actually does all of the investigations into just about every crash that ever happens, and it takes them months and months sometimes to piece it all together and to put gather all the information, particularly on that helicopter that just looked like it just fell apart. The rotor, as we're getting better and better images from people, that where it looks like the helicopter and the rotor just separated from each other, in which that's just a very rare, one in a couple million chances of that happening. But we're learning a lot more as time goes on. And that airplane that rolled over, it was Delta that rolled over, and luckily everybody survived. That was kind of a freak accident, that one. But fortunately, everybody lived through that, and with the wings getting ripped off was quite. Quite a story and quite a picture of just that happening, and then everybody lives. So, air traffic controllers are under a lot of stress. And unfortunately, I think at Reagan Airport and many of the airports around the U.S., I still fly little airplanes occasionally. And if you're going anywhere near a larger airport, sometimes they'll say no training available, or no, practice landings are available, so that, it's just airplanes coming in and out, and they're trying to keep, training and other things at bay, particularly on busy weekends and busy travel time. So the air traffic controllers, it's a very stressful job. And it for pilots, particularly when you're taxiing and things like that, that's when you're sort of the busiest. As soon as you get pushed back from the gate, you're running checklists, you're talking to ground control, and then you get out in line and you're waiting, you're talking to the tower, and then you're talking to departure, you're taking the airplane off and getting it configured, gear up, flaps up, all of those types of things. You're very busy for about the first half hour or more when you push back from the gate. And then about that last half hour when you're in for landing, That's unfortunately when most accidents happen on both of those, you know, takeoffs and landings, and that's when the pilots are the busiest.
I got two questions for you. One is about the, you know, a lot of people pointing out in our chat room saying it's DEI. It's very easy to sort of paint a broad brush and say this is all, you know, air traffic control, DEI, pilot DEI hiring. You know, we're not going to hire men specifically. That was a few weeks ago, another story that we covered here on the show. So is DEI at the heart of a lot of these issues? And number two, are there any stories over these aviation disasters over the past few months that we've seen since President Trump has been in office where you say, well, I still, this doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I want answers on this particular story because this just doesn't pass the smell test.
Well, as far as the DEI, I'm not sure what the FAA's hiring standards are. If they got lowered because of DEI, then absolutely. But I'm not really quite sure, you know, what they had done as far as air traffic controllers. And they still have to, even if their standards are lower to get people in, as long as they're still doing the same training. But if they lowered the standards for training, then absolutely it's DEI. Then, you know, which should not be permitted, particularly with a job that this high stress level, and you gotta be on top of your game 100% of the time. Otherwise, you know, people's lives are at stake. The helicopter American Airlines crash is, to me, that was the fault. That was human error on a couple of parts. Primarily, the tower should have told that helicopter, that military helicopter, to stay clear of that landing path. Even if they were at I understood the helicopter was at 340 feet instead of 200 feet. Even at 200 feet, that's way too close to go underneath a landing airliner. So that the air traffic control should have had the heads up and said, hey, stay clear until this traffic lands in front of you. Those two airplanes should, you know, the helicopter and the American Airlines should not have been in the same airspace at the same time. Yes, Reagan is busy, but that should have never have happened. And to me, that one does need some answers, particularly, I think, on the air traffic control side.
Yeah.
Well, my father is, he flies small planes as well. And one of the things he says is that aviation is the second most safe way to travel behind the American school bus. He says that is what he was taught in flight school. So what can we as passengers take from this? Can we still sort of have the trust in aviation as a mode of transportation? And is that right? Do you know that? Have you also heard that statistic about the American school bus?
I haven't heard this American school bus, but I used to commute. I live in San Diego, and I used to drive to L.A. I was based out of Los Angeles, and then I flew, you know, to whatever routes they had me on. And the most dangerous part was driving between San Diego and L.A. And then I'd go fly a 3-day trip around the world, and that would be safer than driving to and from home. So I wasn't on a school bus, but just, you know, driving the L.A. freeways was not. I felt safer in the air. For that. But I really, you know, don't think, I think aviation is still, you know, one of the safest means of travel. And you know, there's hundreds of thousands of flights a day, and there's hundreds of thousands of passengers being carried a day. Statistically, you know, driving in an automobile is much more dangerous, I think. And when an airplane crashes, it's much more, you know, lack of another term, sensationalized. And because they're usually very horrific crashes, and they're not, you know, they gather more watchers than car accidents. But I still think aviation is very safe. And as long as, you know, we keep our standards high, we don't just fall into the DEI scenarios and make sure we hire our merit and ability. You know, the airlines, you know, they used to do that, and I think they still are. But those were criteria that you had to have. When I got hired, you had to have 20/20 vision. If you didn't, you weren't going to get hired. So they've lowered those types of limitations, but hopefully for ability and being able to safely handle the aircraft is job one.
Yeah. Jim Desmond, former pilot. I think I called you a Boeing whistleblower earlier. My apologies on that. I had conflated notes here myself. But you know, at least keeping the aviation industry honest. And yeah, I hope we can get away from this DEI stuff. I know it's been happening at a couple of different airlines. Jim, great to see you as always. Thanks for joining us again. And great to see you.
Thanks, Clayton. Hey, and I flew Boeings all my career. They're safe.
Okay. There you go. All right.
He's not a Boeing whistleblower. So.
Right. Well, we know what happens to them.
Right. Anyway. That's why we want to make absolutely sure Keep this guy safe.
Not a Boeing whistleblower. Jim, great to see you. All right, thanks. Come on.
Thanks a lot.
All right, coming up here on the show, we're going to talk about this new CIA UFO report that's just been released. James Fox. We're thrilled to have James on the show. I've been wanting to have James on for like a couple of years now, so really excited about that. It's going viral about this new CIA UFO document we're going to talk about with him, of course, and also James has his brand new documentary that just hit recently. If you haven't seen it, you have to. We'll talk about that. But first, I want to tell you about our friends at American Financing. With everything that's happening in the economy, it feels like we're walking on shaky ground. Prices stuck at really high levels. Is anything affordable anymore? I mean, they look at home prices, for crying out loud. It's no wonder many people are relying on credit cards just to cover the gaps right now. A lot of young people relying on credit cards. Credit card debt is skyrocketing, and it's leaving a lot of people stressed out. If you're a homeowner, you don't have to face this uncertainty alone. Our friends at American Financing can help you take control. They can help you access the equity in your home to help you pay down the high interest credit card debt, giving you the peace of mind and real savings. On average, people don't just like you are saving $800 a month. Plus, they may even close your loan in as little as 10 days. Don't let the chaos of the economy right now get the best of you. Call American Financing now. It'll cost you nothing to get started, and you may even delay two of your mortgage payments, giving you a cushion in this uncertain time. That phone number, just call them, 866-890-8434 today, 866-890-8434, or go to AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. Their NMLS number is 182334.
The new McCrispy Strip is here. Dip approved by ketchup, tangy barbecue, honey mustard, Sprite, McFlurry, Big Mac sauce, double dipped in buffalo and ranch, more ranch, and creamy chili McCrispy Strip Dip. Now at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle. With Ultra Titanium Alloy Metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
All right, you guys ready to talk some UFOs? I saw someone earlier in the chat as we were kicking off the show said, yes, we're going to talk UFOs today. Right, we're going to talk aliens. We absolutely are. We're going to do it with James Fox here in a second. So a viral CIA document has just resurfaced online. It's blowing up with some fresh intrigue. The declassified file posted on the CIA's website describes a bizarre Cold War era incident involving a supposed alien attack on Soviet soldiers. According to the report, which draws from the Canadian and Ukrainian sources, Soviet troops allegedly shot down a UFO during a training exercise sometime around 1989 or 1990. We'll tell you all about how crazy this thing unfolds here in just a second. I want to save that for you in a second. But today we've got filmmaker, UFO investigator James Fox joining us. You know him from documentaries like Moment of Contact and The Phenomenon, which dig deep into some of the most compelling UFO encounters on record. And his latest is called The Program. James, let me just show a little teaser here before I say hello to you. Here is The Program. Watch.
In 2017, the New York Times published a story exposing a secret government program investigating UFOs.
That story was kind of a catalyst for a lot of things that have happened since. Members of Congress started to ask questions.
Instruments report there is something there.
There are flight characteristics that we can't explain.
UAPs are unexplained. It's true. They need to be investigated.
Here we are having a hearing where just a few years ago, we didn't even acknowledge that these things were real.
There he is. James Fox is the man behind these great documentaries, and he's a fantastic UFO investigator. And James, what I love about your work is you come at it from a real, I think almost like I should say skeptical point of view and a real clear-headed point of view when you approach these stories. So I wanted to have you on because this story seemed like right up your alley. First, maybe you want to paint a picture for us what you think of this story, this CIA document that's resurfaced.
Absolutely. So one thing that I can say, obviously, we're looking at a document that was previously classified that leaked. George Knapp has a bunch of previously classified documents that he sort of snuck out of Russia in the mid-90s that revealed incursions from UFOs over, ICBM base in Ukraine where they UFOs allegedly activated
a couple missiles that were directed at the United States and started a missile launch, which was terrifying. And then after, I guess, that, the Russians developed a no hands down, no shoot policy against UFOs because of obviously their displayed or their exhibited technology flies rings around what we can do. But I will say, I did speak directly with a general, Parviz Jafari in Tehran, Iran, who had a really dramatic encounter with a UFO in 1975 or 76. And he tried to shoot it out of the sky.
Famous incident.
Very famous incident. And I spoke to him personally. I flew him into Washington, D.C. to testify at the National Press Club with Leslie Kane. And he said that he thought he was going to have to jump out of his airplane in the middle of the night because this UFO froze everything in his cockpit. And like it read his mind as he was about to shoot this thing. He's going to literally, has it in his sights, he's going to pull the trigger and his airplane just completely freezes up. So there was a policy adopted, I think, internationally. When you see UFOs, don't take a hostile, aggressive position. Just leave them alone and they won't bother you. So,
oh my gosh.
So reading,
although
reading
that's kind of ballsy, though, to think about even shooting it. Did he tell you why he thought to do that? Was he being aggressive towards him?
Well, no, because he said, you know, when you see something, as you're trained as a military person, a fighter pilot, when you see something in the sky that you're unable to identify and it's not revealing its identity, you got to shoot it out of the sky. You have to think of it as potentially hostile. And this thing apparently was flying rings around his F-4 Phantom jet. But he got a lock on it, and he said he was a bead away from pulling the trigger to try to shoot this thing out of the sky. And that's when all hell broke loose.
The question, if they can read his mind, why can't they teleport or, you know, telepathically say, we're not hostile, we're not doing, you know, like, this is just so many questions.
It's really interesting. You know, I interviewed this gentleman years later. I flew him out to Washington, D.C., along with a number of other military and government officials from seven countries. And he was reflecting back on the incident. And he said, you know, James, one of my biggest regrets was I didn't try and make peaceful contact with this thing. Instead, I took an aggressive, hostile approach and tried to shoot it out of the sky when it wasn't threatening me in any way. And it's interesting, you know, there are other documents that have leaked out since that alleged incident in, late 80s, but there was a landing case that happened in Moscow. I'm trying to remember the name of it, Voronezh, 1989. And these aliens allegedly made contact with children. And that happens all around the world. So you wonder if the military is going to take a hostile position, perhaps. And if you did want to make contact, and again, I'm speculating, but it's informed speculation, I would probably rather make contact with children than fighter jets.
Sure.
So I want to go through this document a little bit here, the CIA document here. So what it reads like science fiction, but according to the CIA document, five humanoid beings reportedly emerged from the wreckage. They fused together, and then they admitted a blinding flash of light. Then they allegedly
they were shot down, apparently.
Which is even more amazing. Then they turned, after they were shot down, they turned 23 soldiers into stone. Only two men survived. The remains were reportedly moved to a secret lab near Moscow, where scientists found the soldiers' molecular structure matched that of limestone. What the hell? I mean, I've heard a lot of UFO stories over the years. Of course, I'm fascinated by it, but I've never heard of a story like this. Have you?
In Greek mythology.
I've heard, I could tell you of dozens and dozens of close encounters of the third kind. That's when people report entities connected with the craft all around the world, China, Russia, Australia, Africa, Brazil, I mean, United States. We've had amazing close encounters of the third kind, extremely well documented. But people taking an aggressive position towards alleged aliens and then being turned to stone, that's a first.
Yeah. I mean, Natalie brings up a great point, Greek mythology. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe, you know, you turn on Ancient Aliens, you can certainly see a lot of connections between things that have happened thousands of years ago. I mean, I don't want to make a huge leap here, but maybe there is something there.
Look, you know, you look at Jacques Vallée, who's one of the intellectual heavyweights within the scientific community, who's investigated UFO reports for his entire career, and he's in his 80s. He wrote a book called Wonders in the Sky, and it basically documents since recorded time these alleged close encounters of the third kind, close encounters of the second kind, cave art, just dating back thousands and thousands of years. So it's my opinion and the opinion of many other researchers that the phenomenon is nothing new. It's been interacting with humanity since the dawn of recorded time.
Where do you come down on disclosure right now and what you're seeing from the Trump administration? We had Representative Luna on the show. We had Congressman Burchett on the show a few weeks ago. I mean, all trying to move in this direction. But I think Americans get like stuck in the mud. Like, where are we with all of this? You've been a huge asset to help in this as well.
That's a fantastic question. And that's one of the things I've been addressing, because people, I think, are feeling really frustrated within the UFO community. Like, we've had three congressional hearings in the last 3 years, two of which we've had high level intelligence officers testify to a bipartisan group of lawmakers under oath. There are consequences for lying to Congress under oath that we have a crash retrieval program, that we are in possession of definitive proof that we are not alone. Bodies and craft. Now, those are some really lofty allegations, but the implications are so profound that we owe it to ourselves to continue this push for transparency, support the lawmakers. So what I've been doing, I feature a couple of people that are apparently firsthand witnesses in the program, this film that I've got out right now, and I'm asking them. It's really frustrating when you tell us there's so many things that you can't say on camera. What is it going to take? And essentially, what I'm getting is President Trump can wave the magic wand with an executive order and relieve us of our NDAs and free from violating our national security oaths, and I'll give you the street addresses. So that's where this is heading. And I think that, we have a few projects. We basically want to hand the administration on a platter, the names of these individuals and just say, hey, wave the magic wand. They'll give you the street addresses.
Wow. Well, I think that's what it's going to have to take, because you're right. We get the Grushes up there. We get David Grush. We get these other people who tell us about the crash retrieval program. We hear about these recovered biologics or bodies, Luis Elizondo and others testifying before Congress. And then you have these Congress sort of butting heads with the Pentagon right now. Like, what can we declassify? What can we admit to the American people? And President Trump has said on day one, full transparency. So it's going to come down to him with a pen.
So very interesting. I had a meeting with the new head of Arrow, John Kosklowski. And there were certain aspects of the meeting that I was not allowed to talk about publicly, because it's kind of an ongoing investigation. But one of the things he said to me, which I thought particularly interesting, was, look, he said, I can't like cut my own hair or style my own hairdo without the approval of the DOD. So my hands are tied. In a sense, he's saying, no matter what we uncover, no matter what like conclusions that we draw based on our investigations for Congress, our hands are tied. If DOD doesn't approve it, we can't release that, right? Now, this is interesting, because you got David Grush, who testified under oath, right? And he's like, I gave all the details needed to verify these accusations, these allegations, to Thomas Mannheim, who was the ICIG, Intelligence Community Inspector General at the time, or one of them. And it's amazing to me that he says that, and how come the media hasn't tried to follow up with him? You know, get an interview with Thomas Mannheim. Apparently, he has the street addresses. He has all the details that we need to verify these. And the DOD took the clearances away from Grush, because they knew that if Grush could get into a skiff with select members of Congress, he would reveal all those details that he can't say publicly. And Congress isn't known for keeping secrets, so it would leak out. So Grush was stripped. And I don't know if he's gotten him back since then, but I know that he was stripped of his clearances.
What do you say to people? Because I always see this in our chat. You know, we're live right now in front of tens of thousands of people. And occasionally I'll see someone in the chat room just say, this is all a psyop. It's all a psyop. When you've been so deeply involved in this for generations of research, what do you say to someone who says, this is all a psyop, James?
I think I completely understand that position. And I've actually explained this to people in the past. One of the reasons why I aligned with David Grush when he was testifying under oath. In fact, I had tears pouring down my face because I had just done a crash retrieval case that I spent 15 years investigating that took place in Virginia, Brazil in 1996. And after, I think, 12 or 13 years, it came to my attention through very compelling eyewitness testimony that the Americans were involved. The Americans flew in, the gentleman called it USAF, United States Air Force, flew in without Brazilian government authorization, landed their plane in this exact area where this stuff was recovered, loaded some stuff up, and flew back to the United States, all secret below the radar. And I was going, oh my gosh, the Americans were involved. I can't believe this. So what David Grush has said aligns with my 30 plus years of research in countries all around the world. And so if I didn't have that field research, I might say, okay, I concede, but I'm also meeting with these intel folks that are complaining about excessive secrecy and putting themselves in potential harm's way by trying to get this information. I'll remind your audience, because people go, oh, the government just sort of had an epiphany out of nowhere and decided that the general public needs to know more about the UFOs. That's not what happened. There were a couple of government insiders or intel insiders that decided through protest of excessive secrecy to walk some evidence, found a loophole, walk some evidence, but it was risky, out of the Pentagon and onto the front page of the New York Times. And that is why they'd not be able to put the genie back in the bottle. And it's made, elected representatives aware of, like, oh my gosh, maybe there's a lot more to UFOs than swamp gas and misidentified aircraft. And now, in the program, now we've got a gentleman who sat in with senators with alleged firsthand witnesses on the program that are actually the metal benders, people that are working on this stuff in labs underground. And we're living in exciting times, but our representatives need to hear from us. They need to hear from us that we support these efforts.
Well, we're going to have Congressman Luna back on here. We talked about her being back on to talk specifically about UFOs. So maybe we could get the two of you on. I'd love to have both of you on simultaneously.
Would love that. I'm working with firsthand witnesses that want to be able to tell the public. In fact, one of them said to me, I'm doing this for my grandchildren. This is why I'm coming forward. I don't want my grandchildren to grow up. Yeah. Not knowing
well,
the truth.
A lot of them, I was just going to say, I didn't mean to cut you off, but a lot of them, on their deathbeds, who served in the military and were a part of these programs, finally admitted they were sworn to secrecy under classified. They told their kids when they were dying. So, we need to get past this. I just want to say, James, I love your work. One of my favorite movies, one of my favorite documentaries is The Phenomenon. I haven't yet seen the program. We've been moving and building a new studio. So that's on my sort of, when I'm finally done with all that hard work, I'm going to sit down and enjoy myself and watch your newest film. Really excited to see that. So just amazing work. I highly recommend our audience go check out your documentaries. Where's the best place they can find them? Are they on available to buy? Where do you rent them?
Amazon. You can rent it. You can rent the program on Amazon for a few bucks. You can buy it. You can go to Apple TV. And then Moment of Contact and The Phenomenon are available on a few free streaming sites, platforms. You can just Google The Phenomenon, Moment of Contact, and the program, which just came out a couple months ago, and that's on Amazon and it's on Apple TV.
Well, James,
thank you so much.
James Fox, it's been a thrill having you here. I'd love to have you back. We'll do a deep dive interview if your schedule allows it in the next couple of weeks. How does that sound?
Would love it. I really appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you very much.
And by the way, I'm going to say this to my wife, James, I want to join you if you go on a big assignment somewhere where you need somebody to come kind of tag along.
This is not news to Natalie.
Yes.
This is not news to me.
We've been married 15 years. I said,
I will bring you to Brazil if you're serious.
Yes, I would love to. Yes.
Yes.
I'm serious.
I'm Portuguese. So
yes,
I
speak the language, so I would be happy.
Even better.
Exactly. James, great to see you. Thank you so much for your incredible work. And yeah, we'd love to have you back on here. We'll do a deep dive. We'll get you on with Congressman Luna if our schedules align. Thank you so much,
anytime,
James. Great to see you.
And anytime, and I appreciate very much what you guys do, and thank you for having me on.
Awesome. Thanks, yeah. James. Appreciate it.
You know, I'm thinking to myself, okay, that's not a bad way to go, be turned into stone, but what if they're still alive in there?
That would be, it turned to limestone, and then someone has to turn
but
you
back?
But you're
still alive in there, right? That's where my mind went. So.
And then you're stuck there watching, and you're just sort of...
And you're just frozen in stone.
Yeah.
For the rest of all time. This is like, this is the great Greek tragedy, right? All right. Well, that's going to do it for us today. First day again in a new studio. We are in transit. That's why it may not be what you're used to, but you get the same players. Don't hate the players. Right?
Yeah. David and Philip and Grim were able to get everything sort of lined up here as quickly as they could while we're building out the new studio. So this is like our temporary dig. So we're going to dial in some stuff after today's show. So thank you for allowing us to come in your
homes.
We
will be back with you tomorrow. Tomorrow's tax day. So try and come in a good mood if you can. But we will see you here tomorrow. Thanks for being here, everybody.